Episode 137.
The Sci-Fi Christian in Parallel Universes?
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono, and we are back!
Back.
That was an explosive intro, Matt.
You said the beginning title as if it was a question. Now I think I have to add a question mark to the title card.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was what you wanted.
It was going to be like this. The Sci-Fi Christian in Parallel Universes.
Oh.
And you went, universes?
Well, I thought that's because we're not sure if they exist or not.
Oh, okay. I think I'll just add a question mark. That seems to make sense.
Kind of, I guess we should have discussed that more. I wasn't clear because that does kind of change the philosophical overtone of the episode.
Oh, well, let's just go from there. So we've had episodes on the multiverse before. In fact, Back by popular demand is the time loop episode coming next. So the next episode will be a time loop episode all about the multiverse. We talked about it in depth before, but there are some aspects we didn't touch on, and so that's what today is for.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of topics, you know, you can't cover all in one episode. So I think that this, you know, needs to be a sci-fi Christian rule that just because we talk about something once doesn't mean we're never going to revisit it.
Plus, it's been 2 years.
Exactly.
A lot of our thoughts may have changed since then.
Yeah, I became a Catholic.
Yeah, I stopped going to school, so I know less.
Yeah. You're getting married?
I actually, sometimes when I listen to those past, I'm getting married. Yeah. I'm so excited. I was just thinking today about how much I love being engaged, but how I think I'll love being married more.
Yeah.
I was listening to me talk on a past episode as I was editing for time loop reasons, and I used a lot more theological language when I was in grad school than I do now.
Yeah.
So you, once again, coming out on top when it comes to theological talking.
Yeah, I'm usually on top.
I don't know what that even means. So you mean just like you think you're better?
I'll let our listeners sort that out.
I don't really know what you mean.
Oh, yeah. Who knows what that could mean?
So, parallel universes, Ben. I don't want to go to it quite yet. Do you have anything you want to talk about?
Just in general?
Yeah.
How was your day?
Good. I meant to bring this up in our last news episode, but we had an idea for an episode. Okay, so get this. I've been finally cleaning out my Gmail inbox, and you know how long it takes me to respond to emails.
I get responses from you. I've got 2 years later.
I'm not kidding. I've got one, and this might take away a little bit of the surprise that I found from you that I never responded to.
Oh my!
July 7th, 2011.
Oh, that's a long time.
And I was
ago.
Going to wait until July 7th this year to respond, but I'm only 33 emails away from cleaning my inbox for the first time since the year 2007.
Whoa! Yeah. Is that a goal before you get married to have your?
No, it's not. It just happened. Like last night, I was up late, kind of returning listener feedback, like just basically saying, hey, thanks for emailing. We might talk about this on the show.
Oh.
But anyways, in the course of going through emails, I found an idea that you had for an episode that we haven't done yet.
Was it a good idea?
I think so.
Okay.
Remember how we did top sci-fi Bible adventures?
Yeah.
Well, your idea was top sci-fi zombie stories.
Oh, yeah.
What stories could we turn into, like what Bible stories could we turn into zombie stories?
Didn't I have that idea again fairly recently?
Yeah, this email was a little bit more recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said it was from July of 2011.
No, that was a different email. I don't even know what that's about. Here, you talk for a second. I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Yeah, that would be an interesting one.
Good.
I'm still on board with my original idea.
Here it is. July 7th, 2010.
Whoa, so that's pre-Sci-Fi Christian.
This is pre-Life Report, because on the first episode of the Life Report, remember how we talked about Star Wars?
Yeah.
So you sent me the Nostalgic Critic makes fun of Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah.
You told me to go check that out, but he said it's inappropriate. You said it's hysterical but inappropriate. Consider yourself warned. And then you also sent me a long...
That was before I became hysterical but inappropriate. Yeah.
And so you sent me a long interview from Gary Kurtz, the producer of A New Hope.
Oh, that's really that's definitely worth reading.
Yeah, so I will be right back.
Is that because the toilet's running?
Yeah, you can talk for a second.
I'm sorry.
No, just talk for a second about our episode.
Well, see, the toilet here in Ryan Strelow's studios doesn't work as well as one might expect. So if you hear something kind of running in the background, that's what it is. Generally, what happens is you flush it, and then it just kind of keeps flushing for...
And the water keeps running.
Yeah, the water keeps running.
You kind of mess with the little... What's the little, like, clicker thing called? Like, where you push it down.
The flusher?
Yeah, but that's not a name.
the handle? I don't know. Yeah. I'm not up on my toilet logo or lingo. Or toilet logos.
What is that thing? Is it just called a flusher?
That's what I'd call it.
So he has to push the flusher down and get the water to stop running. So yeah. It's okay, Ben. You have to go to the bathroom after the last episode.
Yeah, I drank a lot today. Not any adult beverages, though. Maybe that's something to tease that out this week. We are going to have a review, maybe even before this episode airs. I'm going to be doing a review of a video review of Game of Thrones beer that just launched.
Man, I mean, every time you bring up this stuff, I just wonder, like, if the long term listeners are like, what happened to you, Ben? What happened?
Well, see, I'm out to say, here's my mission, my little mission in my corner of the sci-fi Christian universe.
Because I'm a little bit more like, conservative, like, I don't really like to mess with that stuff. And you're like, yeah, cake party.
As long as it's done in temperance, things like smoking and drinking can be wonderful ways to enjoy God's creation.
I wonder if we should have an episode on this, because it's such a wide variety spectrum of people that, like, there's some that really feel strongly you should never drink, and some that are like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a sci-fi episode, but it is a theological.
Maybe a Bible trivia podcast. I don't know.
No, that's not for Bible trivia. Bible trivia is more like getting trivia that's not trivial.
Oh, yeah. That's a great tagline.
It's going to be like this. Bringing you trivia that's not trivial.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of bringing you theology.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could do an episode on that. I mean, my position is basically that as long as you're practicing with moderation and you're not being reckless, it's good ways to enjoy God's creation. And I think those things are there for our enjoyment. And that's certainly the position of, people, great Christians like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, both people who enjoyed pipe smoking. They enjoyed drinking in moderation, and it became a part of their philosophy with how they looked at their faith and how they looked at the world.
Interestingly, even though I kind of make fun of you for talking about pipe smoking all the time, if I was to see a picture of C.S. Lewis pipe smoking, I wouldn't think less of him.
Exactly. It's on one of the most famous pictures of Tolkien is of him sitting there with his
take that, listeners.
Yeah, so I think that, the key is that we have so many people who don't do things in moderation, and they just do things to get drunk, or reckless, or they're smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, and all that's just terrible. And I don't endorse any of that. But, the distance between pipe smoking and cigarette smoking is the distance between a McDonald's hamburger and a fine steak. It's night and day. And the wonderful thing about pipe smoking is as long as you're not inhaling, it's really not addictive. So there's no reason that you have to do it all day, every day or anything. I don't do that. But every now and then, great thing to do in moderation. So that's my endorsement.
Do you feel good about that now?
So that's my mission, promoting temperance, but enjoyment.
See, and now this is a good reason now, listeners, why why time loop episodes exist. Because I can take all that out. And then
that's a timeless message.
And then we can just come right to this.
Oh, yeah. So, a future time loop episode, are you still going to edit? Because we don't do news and listener feedback anymore.
I think time loop is really just for the first season. I don't know if we're going to need it for second and third and into the future.
Yeah, it's just kind of a rerun.
Then it's literally a rerun.
Yeah. Right now it's 90% a rerun.
Yeah. No, 80.
Probably 99.
Yeah. But it does serve a purpose. For example, people are going to be able to easily find a continuation. And if you were to just go to iTunes right now and try to download all our episodes, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You can only go back to like 79.
Yeah, because iTunes only lets you do like the most recent 50 or something.
But yeah, and so you can listen to all the episodes on the internet.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice to have them all on iTunes, like I have.
Yeah,
until my iTunes crashed.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Parallel universes.
What are they?
Well, I think an interesting thing to discuss would be, do you want to start with this or end with this? All the different differences between timelines and universes that our listeners came up with.
I want to start with this because I actually, you're going to teach me something here, Matt, because you were posting this online this weekend, parallel universe, alternate universe, divergent timeline, deviant timeline, and I could throw a fairly good definition at a couple, but there was some, I wasn't quite clear what the difference between a deviant timeline and a divergent timeline was. So I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on this, because I am the student.
Good. Well, the nice thing is there weren't an abundance of responses, so I think I can feel comfortable reading them all.
Okay.
So let's start with, what would you say, this is the question of the day from a couple days ago, what would you say is the difference between a divergent timeline and a deviant timeline?
Yeah.
Mike Poteet writes, deviant carries moral connotations. Perhaps it shouldn't be, but as a word, it... Oh, sorry. Perhaps it shouldn't, but as a word, it does. Divergent seems more neutral. Then he goes on to say, like he meant negative moral connotation.
Right.
A timeline could deviate without being deviant. But deviate from what? Are these categories even still relevant now that physicists speak of ever-expanding quantum realities? I think old Star Trek-style talk of fixing the timeline has to be nuanced to say fixing the timeline as we know it, which may itself diverge and be deviant from some other timeline, which may itself, etc.
Go ahead. Yeah. So that's...
It looked like you wanted to respond. Do you know?
No, okay. I don't. Sorry.
Okay.
maybe I should like wave my arms. We should have a hand signal we do if we want to respond to each other.
David writes.
Wait, that, you're not going to read Paul's?
I don't really know what this even means. I agree with whatever. Oh, okay. Paul writes, I agree with whatever Ben DeBono says, at least after I listen to the podcast on that topic.
You know what Paul's saying?
Ben is right.
I am right.
Yeah, Ben is right.
Ben is right.
I like you this new right. theme.
It's pretty beautiful. Right.
Ben is right. I like it, but I don't like how long right. it is.
I know. I like to make the ones about me pretty long.
It's apology time.
So okay. Paul's saying Ben is right. Mm-hmm. Well done, Paul.
David Den writes, divergent timelines meet up and synchronize for a brief moment. Deviant timelines are one timeline but broke off and separated.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Is that how you would define it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
This is how I always thought about it, but I usually use Wikipedia to research these topics, and in this case, I have not.
Yeah.
These are all original thoughts, so I could be wrong about what the official definition is.
Okay.
But to me, a divergent timeline is something has happened to change the timeline as it was meant to happen, and it's diverged and become something else.
Okay. So, like, give me an example.
Back to the Future. Biff goes back, gives the almanac to his younger self, and that changes it, and we have a darker, divergent timeline.
So there's one timeline.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my gosh. I just stole that totally wrong.
Okay.
That's the deviant timeline.
Okay.
Because deviant, like Mike was saying, has a negative connotation.
Yeah.
So it has gone off and went a place it wasn't supposed to go.
So there's one timeline, mm-hmm. but because of time travel, it gets messed up from what it was supposed to be.
Yep.
Okay.
Divergent timeline. This is... Yeah. It's a little bit close to the idea of... I think deviant does carry with it something bad.
Yeah.
Divergent still is... It's not... going the way it should be going, but it's not like a dark timeline.
So positive, negative.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what but like I said, these are my own definitions. I don't know if this is correct.
See, I would think of that almost as though, here's what I was thinking, and you tell me if this is even a ballpark of what you were thinking, that like there's one timeline, and then, you know, a choice is made, and then it forks off into two different timelines from that point.
Same thing. Okay. I also kind of have the belief that... You know, and just like in past episodes, we're having this for more of a philosophical talk. We're not saying that we necessarily really believe in these things, and we'll come back to that. But with the understanding that these do exist for the sake of the episode, I would tend to believe that timelines don't stop existing. So, you know, like in Back to the Future 2, he wants to make that dark timeline never exist.
Yeah.
I don't think that's possible. I think once it exists, it has existed, and it will exist. So you can't really fix things. You just have to get back to wherever...
You can just make a new version that's better than the old one.
Yeah.
But the bad one still exists.
Yep.
Interesting.
Okay, let's go to now the difference. The question of the day was, what would you say is the difference between a parallel universe and an alternate universe?
Yeah.
Maybe parallel is more being just like ours, and the differences come up when different choices are made by our same selves there. An alternate universe seems to be filled with opposites, like a mirror where everything is backwards. I always liked the mirror episodes of all the Treks for that reason. A good explanation of an alternate universe. Fringe was good too. It was more alternate than parallel. That was by Tracy O'Quinn. Next up, Aaron Rainey says, I may be wrong, but I've come to think of reboots as alternate universes.
Well, this is kind of a cool idea.
In other words, reimagining a character without having to be weighed down by continuity. For example, Christian Bale's Batman isn't the grandson of Adam West Batman or any crap like that.
That'd be messed up.
He actually says he takes it back. He says that would be awesome.
No, it wouldn't.
Parallel universes are different in that they give us all an opportunity to mention the term string theory without having any idea what we're talking about.
I plan on doing that several times during this episode.
Are you really going to?
I'll find a way to work it in. I don't understand string theory a bit, but I'll pretend like I do.
All right. And finally, Kimberly says, my understanding as follows. Parallel universes run side by side and can be either very similar or very different. Alternate universes is where the current one has been changed somehow by time or dimension traveling entities and is no longer the original version. As Back to the Future proved, you can almost restore an alternate universe to the original, but it will never be the same as that original. See, again, I think when Marty went back, he actually was now, he wasn't in the place he started. He's in a new, okay, different timeline.
Yeah. Let me give you my definitions, and then I want to hear yours, because you tell me if I'm anywhere close. So I would define a parallel universe as being what Kimberly said. It's a universe that's similar to ours, but maybe slight, maybe major differences. So like Fringe, the two universes, those would be parallel universes in my mind. And alternate universes, I would think of it would be something like Narnia, where there's a different universe, but it's completely different. No similarities whatsoever.
This is exactly what I think. And
all right, actually, I got it.
I have a specific example, though, from comics. Are you familiar with DC Comics' big event from 1985? It was called Crisis on Infinite Earths.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. The reason I think this is a good example is because it kind of shows both. There were some universes. Like, I don't think that it, like, defines one of those perfectly, but you can see examples in both. In some universes, there are, like, alternate versions of Superman and Batman just making different choices. So maybe they're good, maybe they're bad, but they were still there. So that is a parallel universe. But then there were other versions, like you were just saying, where it's, like, not just parallel or not just, like, similar. It's, like, its own thing. Like, there's animals talking. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Your example of Narnia might be more appropriate for our audience if they're not familiar with the DC multiverse.
Yeah, I'm not.
But, alternate universe, totally different. Parallel universe, similarities. So then when Tracy was saying that the Mirror Mirror episodes of Trek were a good example of an alternate universe, I disagree. Those are parallel universes because it's the same characters, but bad.
So parallel universe, Matt Anderson is sitting here recording with Colby, and alternate universe, we're just all animals, or we don't even exist in any form. There's no version of us. Jesus might be there because he's Aslan in the alternate universe.
Yeah, that's a good example. See, Jesus came, but in like a totally different form.
Right,
could be a parallel Jesus in the other parallel
universe. That's because he's God. Most people don't get that option.
I think it's easier to define parallel universe versus alternate universe as opposed to, I think, divergent and deviant timelines. Those are tough to distinguish.
It is. Yeah, that's... That's still a little tricky because it seems like they should be entirely different concepts, at least in my mind. Not just one went well and one went bad.
I'm going to go ahead and just break my rule and go to the internet while you do this.
Okay. Because I kind of like the idea of having one category. Maybe you'd have to think of different titles for them, but I kind of like the idea of having one category be for a timeline where there is only one timeline. There's no branching whatsoever, but you go forward, you go back, you can fix it, you change things better or worse, on and on it goes. And then I like the idea of there being branching, like what you were saying, where you can never really fix something, you can just create a different possibility. But I suppose in that case, whatever that one would be creates parallel universes, whereas the first one, where there would be just one timeline, never creates another universe. There's just one. Well, there might be an alternate universe, but there's only one universe of us, and we fix the timeline as it occurs.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of like the idea more that there is something fixable.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I like it more. I would conceive of those as maybe being two different ways of looking at the equation.
Here's something kind of interesting. A quick search of Google doesn't bring up a lot for deviant timeline, but it instantly for divergent timeline brought up the idea of alternate history or alternate reality.
Right.
So it makes me think the deviant timeline term is lesser used than I thought it was.
Yeah, I in my mind, I would relate divergent timeline to parallel universe as step one, step two. Timeline diverges and it creates a parallel universe. Though I suppose you could have a parallel universe that just have always existed and they're just in parallel, but you'd think that's unlikely.
So then for the remainder of our episode, should we drop the term deviant timeline and just stick with divergent timeline?
Well, I'm good with whatever categories you want because you've done the hard work on this.
Let's drop it. Deviant timeline gone, divergent timeline, all that exists, and that runs parallel with parallel universes.
Yeah, because you think that for a parallel universe to exist and be anything close to what we have, it would have had to have diverged at one point. Because once things start to change, they're going to get farther and farther apart.
No, we should have done for this episode.
What?
We should have done top five favorite alternate universe like stories.
Oh yeah, well, that's like, no, that could be another episode.
Okay,
we get our money's worth out of this topic. Sorry, we just did the top five last week.
I know, but it would have been kind of cool to be
we'll
come back to that.
Maybe some other time. But yeah, because you couldn't have had a parallel universe that was parallel from the beginning of time, because then things would get so different that it wouldn't even be recognizable after a while, wouldn't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like the butterfly effect.
I know, that's the thing. When we have stories where there's like two versions of Ben and two versions of Matt,
yeah,
the chances of that actually happening are unlikely, because at what point did the second place start, and what made it go different? Yeah. Like, there has to be some sort of catalyst. It can't just have always existed, otherwise they would be totally different.
Right.
Like the chances of you and me being born exactly the same way are astronomically opposed to that.
Right. Because just one person in your entire ancestry has to, you know, marry someone else.
Yeah.
And you're not Matt anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But on the other hand...
That's interesting. Yeah. No one really talks about that.
Right.
Because for the sake of story, it's nice to think, oh...
Everything's the same. Yeah, because it's fun kind of in the scenario place. So, and we're going to talk about some scenarios later, but it's fun to think, like, what if this one thing way back in history had been different and everything else is the same?
So alternate histories are kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah, I mean, they can work if you think about the divergent being similar, but you can't work like, let's say that we write an alternate history where there's an alien invasion in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wouldn't make sense for everything to be the same, you know, where you and I are still existing today, because it's theoretically an event that major changes enough things where our ancestry gets screwed up as a result somehow. You know, maybe your great-great-great-great-grandpa dies, or he marries somebody else as a result of aliens blowing up his hometown. I don't know. So there's lots of different ways it can go, and everything's just going to get all jumbled up into completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that wouldn't make a lot of sense.
I feel like alternate history stories are really popular. Like, people they always go back to this idea that, what if the Nazis won World War II?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Why do you think that is? Why do people like the idea of exploring these... I mean, usually darker histories, but they like to see what could have happened.
Well, I think it kind of gives us it's kind of a sci-fi extension of legitimate historical questions. I mean, it's always a legitimate question, what if this had happened?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the Nazis...
And people do those thought experiments to start, like, run them through. So science fiction gives you a way to tell stories in that world.
Yeah, and especially in something like World War II, where if you study World War II history, it's surprising that Hitler didn't win, you know, if you really look at it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't heard that. Why is that?
Well, he chose to, you know, so he's fighting on the Western Front, and the Russians and Nazis are allies throughout most of World War II, and then Hitler decides to invade Russia, which was an idiotic mistake. It's beyond stupid, because now he has to fight a two-front battle.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, he has to invade Russia in the winter, which is never a good idea. So, sci-fi Christian tip, if you're going to invade Russia, do it in the summer. Okay. In fact, did you know that both Hitler and Napoleon invaded Russia, like, on the exact same day?
No.
So there's a whole bunch of weird coincidences like that. And they both lost as a result of trying to invade Russia in the winter.
So are you saying if the Nazis would not have betrayed Russia, that we would have lost, likely?
Not guaranteed, but yeah, there's a strong possibility of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the fact that Britain holds out with the invasion of Britain and the bombing runs. That's very unlikely. That could have easily swung the Nazis' way. So there's a whole bunch of things like that could have happened.
Hmm.
You look at... the Civil War, you know, there's a good argument to be made that if the Confederates win Gettysburg, or Robert E. Lee does what he should have done, tactically speaking, and withdraws from Gettysburg, the Confederates stand a very good chance of winning that war. you know, it's only when Lee decided he was going to invade the North that they started to really lose. As long as they were playing a defensive battle on their home turf, it wasn't looking good for the Union. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of small things like that in history that you can look at and say, if that one thing had been different, it likely could have gone the other way.
That's really interesting. So why – I want to come back to the question I was asking you. Why in sci-fi do we kind of like to explore the darker realities? Because a lot of time in these time travel stories, the thing that changes makes everything way worse. And right. So that's the world is – I have an answer I just was thinking about, but go ahead and tell me what you're thinking.
Well, part of it's the drama. I mean, we want stories with lots of drama. But I think also some of it is that, you know, at some level we feel comfortable with the world we have. And there's something very nerve-wracking of kind of rolling the dice in saying, well, what if this had been different? It's kind of throwing everything out, and it's a lot more fun to maybe think about what is going wrong in a world we don't have to live in but very well could have lived in. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of gives us a sense of having that narrow escape from a dark history.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you. It does feel a lot like the hero needs something to overcome.
Right.
And so why not put the hero into an interesting setting like the South has won the Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. You know, realistically, how much would one thing make a huge difference in our present reality? It depends on what it is. I mean, the Nazis winning World War II would have been huge, but would we have survived having two Americas, you know, Confederacy mm-hmm. and the Union? Yeah. I mean, I think we'd still have a decent world today if something like that had happened. Would we have survived losing the Revolutionary War? Yeah, I mean, obviously lots of things change at that point, but yeah, it's not the end of the world if something like that happens.
Something I've realized a lot is that it feels like time travel stories and alternate universe, parallel universe stories, they go hand in hand. And it really is because the springboard to have this parallel universe is somebody travels in time and changes things. But then meanwhile, you have stories like Narnia where this is a totally different world.
Yeah.
They can exist side by side. And you don't have to, but you know, they're alternate, they're not parallel. So,
right.
Is there any way to have a parallel universe that where the springboard isn't time travel? Or like you, because you already said you can't just have them existing side by side forever unless they're just totally different worlds. And in that case, I don't even know if they are parallel.
Yeah, not, I don't know if you can. I mean, it really, I mean, I suppose Fringe didn't really include much time travel in it, if any. From what I remember, you can do it as a thought experiment, like not necessarily have two worlds side by side in your stories, but just here's one, this is how it's different, mm-hmm. and it becomes more of a thought experiment. Or you can just ignore the question of origin altogether. You know, mm-hmm. we're not concerned with how these parallel universes came into existence and why they're similar. We just accept it as a given.
And that's what everybody has to do, basically, from those stories.
Yeah, unless you do want to go back to where do they diverge, and that becomes more of a time travel story.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, so there's a lot of people that believe in the parallel universe camp that for every choice you have,
right,
in some universe you do make that choice, and then that springs off. So then this idea of a multiverse or an infinite universe, that's where it comes from, is that for every choice you have, that you actually did make the choice, and it exists, if not here, then over in that other universe.
Yeah.
What do you think about – where do you go with – I mean, and I told you you should go watch this movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? The Bleep is actually part of the title.
It's a bleep, yeah.
Yeah. So – and this is a big topic. The whole movie is like a documentary slash weird like – fiction story kind of tied together in a bad way.
Can't recommend it.
No, it's on Netflix, but I give it a 2. You give it a 1.
I didn't even finish it.
Yeah. But they talk about that kind of parallel universe where all realities can exist.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to think about, obviously. Something like that, especially as we get into the spiritual implications of it, something like that would have far more significant spiritual implications, I would think, than there being an alternate universe or one or two parallel universes that diverged at significant points. I mean, you're talking an infinite number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
It's incomprehensible.
Yeah, completely. And so what does that mean, especially from a Christian perspective? It raises the question, did that apply to Jesus too? You know, is there a universe where – he didn't die on the cross, because that's what it would ostensibly say. So it raises a lot of questions like that. I'm not somebody to say, well, that's incompatible with Christianity, because I think that's just taking too narrow of a view of things. But it would certainly, if we were to discover that tomorrow, it would completely change our theology of everything. Would have to. Everything's up for grabs, again, about how we think about things.
So this documentary kind of called this quantum mechanics, quantum physics. They call
String theory. Yeah. That's what string theory is all about.
So they call quantum physics the physics of possibilities. And so I think it is interesting, since we've already talked about on past episodes, multiverse and parallel universe, I think we should dive into the theological aspect of it, because I don't know if we talked about that as much. And in this movie, even they, although they're against God, they take about, in the middle of the movie, there's at least 10 minutes probably just bashing the idea of God.
Yeah.
I wrote down a few notes, but one thing that comes to mind is where they talked about how it's like the height of arrogance that we would think that we'd be able to sin against a supreme being. And so they actually, but they, with that being said, they refer to something called the ultimate observer. And this person is kind of the all-knowing watcher in this parallel universe.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think that it is, in some sense, it's kind of a Gnostic view of God in some ways. So Gnosticism, at least in its early first, second century incarnations, gets a bit more specific than that. But, you know, it's kind of the Platonic first mover. It gets you around some of the contingency questions that we reach into with, you know, the question of God in terms of what started everything in motion. Yeah. Very much dualistic, or not dualistic, deism, you know, very much a deistic view of God. So I think that's a very popular idea among the people who would say that they're spiritual but not religious.
Okay. They also said in this documentary, physical reality only comes into existence when it bumps into another piece of reality. And then it goes on to say that things, like, all possibilities are existing right now until we make a choice. Or a better way to put it, like, here's a water bottle right here.
Yeah.
This water bottle could be in all different places around the room until I choose to look at it, and then it hones in into one place. So it could be, its physical material could be anywhere until I, as a active player in this game, look at it, and then then it's someplace.
Yeah.
Like, and that runs with the parallel universe talk, but how does that line up with this idea of quantum mechanics?
Well, it's interesting, because obviously I'm not a scientist, so I don't want to put my foot in my mouth too much here, but it seems that, you know, they make this statement, you said, and I didn't get to this part in the video where they're bashing God, but that it's the ultimate arrogance to say that we could sin against a divine being. Isn't it also pretty arrogant, though, to say that reality is contingent upon our choices, you know, our observations? That seems to me to be equally, if not far more so, arrogant than the notion of sin. So that, I mean, it's an interesting idea to think about.
Yeah.
To me, you could spin it in this way philosophically, that something like that, or even the every choice we make creates a divergent timeline. Yeah. You could spin it philosophically to say that that is an argument for God, because we are comprehending a single reality.
Okay, yeah.
And so there's all these possibilities, and that part of what God does in terms of sustaining the universe is bring all of them into a single observed reality that we experience despite the infinite branching out there.
Oh, I like that. All right, one last point from the movie, and then I want to go into some of our outline that we talked about.
Oh, okay.
In the movie, it says, fundamental laws of physics don't make any distinction between past and future. So, one step at a time. Do you think that's true? For the laws of physics, they don't make a distinction between past and future. Yes or no?
It's probably too much of a broad statement, but I mean, we certainly understand that time is more complicated than we once thought it was.
So now listen to this. They go on to ask, why can we remember the past but not the future? And then they say, why can we act now and affect the future but not the past? So they're saying that with the laws of physics as they are, we should be able to be in all time at once.
Yeah. Some of that I feel like is taking the principle of something like the theory of relativity, which absolutely has to, we have to take away from that, that time is way more complex than just A, B, C, D, you know, the straight linear progression. It seems to me that that's the bare minimum of the implications. But it doesn't necessarily imply that time is so complex that that kind of chronology is completely irrelevant. It's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly theory of relativity teaches us that there's more going on in time than we understand right now. So it's possible, but that would be just one interpretation of it, and a pretty extreme one at that.
Yeah. I want to go to some of our now more Christian theological discussion.
Let's do it.
And so a good way, just kind of a jumping off point for this conversation, would be to discuss some different scenarios. So, you know, for example, what would it mean if we discovered a parallel universe that had no concept of God?
Yeah.
Or what would it mean if it was we found a universe that was entirely atheistic?
Right.
Let's talk about some of this.
Yeah, either a parallel universe or an alternate universe. And this is kind of interesting, like with, Narnia, where, oh, of course, they've got Aslan over there. We've got Jesus. Yeah. They've got Aslan. It makes sense. And we kind of would assume, I think, as Christians, that if we were to find an alternate universe, there would be something like that. Certainly, mm-hmm. God wouldn't leave them alone. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that we discover one, and there's no Aslan. Right. Or it's a universe that's very similar to ours, so a parallel universe in our world, but there's just no religion, period.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Christianity, but nothing. Nobody believes in God.
Yeah.
What in the world does that mean?
I think...
Yeah, that would have... it would be something that would throw open the doors of theology.
If we did discover... I'm just going to say it here on the Sci-Fi Christian. If we discovered a parallel universe where Christianity didn't exist in any form, not just that it didn't have the same name, but that it literally didn't exist.
Yeah.
We would disprove Christianity.
You think so?
Yeah.
I would disagree.
I don't see how you can, because if God hasn't made himself known there in some way that is... It has to be a little bit similar to ours, where at least people are talking about it. It can't just be something inside that a lot of people believe but not talk about.
Let me give you a parallel, though. So we live in a world where you can get anywhere within a matter of hours, mm-hmm. in the entire world. So we basically, with some exceptions, we have access to anyone on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't always the case. In fact, that's relatively recently. So for the majority of history, you would have people who were completely unreached by the gospel or Judaism or anything like that. So mm-hmm. any concept of Christianity, of what we would consider true religion, completely absent from their lives, they're completely insulated from it.
Mm-hmm.
How is that any different from this scenario?
Well, the scenario you set out was not just that it hasn't reached there yet, it's that it didn't exist.
But isn't that just a more advanced version of it hasn't reached there yet? Maybe God wants us, maybe part of the Great Commission then is to take the message of the gospel to this atheistic alternate universe.
So then what about the eons or centuries that this alternate universe has existed without any knowledge of God, that God was just waiting for us to dimensionally travel?
But you have the same problem with people who never heard about Jesus in lands that were completely unreached until relatively recently.
Oh my gosh.
Matt is done being a Christian.
I mean, I'm just saying that...
I agree it's a problem.
Because...
I just don't think you get away from the problem by saying that that doesn't exist. I think a smaller microcosm of that problem exists in our world right now.
Okay, I will accept your point. High five.
All right.
Next question. What if we get to a world where all the religions that currently exist, but not Christianity?
Well, that would be messed off.
So Buddhism, Hinduism,
Islamism.
You like to say it, Muslimism.
Muslim.
they all exist, but not Christianity.
Right. I don't know what you'd do with that. Again, you could take a similar parallel to what I said with the last one, but this presents an entirely different problem, I think, in the sense that it's a parallel universe where the world has grown up as it would, and presumably Judaism is one of those that would exist, but not Christianity.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yep. So, if all other religions exist, then yeah.
Yeah, so it's the Messiah didn't come is essentially what we're saying, that Jesus was never incarnate.
So maybe he hasn't come yet.
Yeah. So that would be one argument that you could take, is that that's the case. Now, so we might have to think of two scenarios, one where Judaism exists, which maybe gives us that out. What about one where it doesn't exist? There's just no concept of the covenant people, which is essentially Christianity is a continuation of that.
Yeah.
That is going to cause some pretty major problems for faith, especially if Islam's there. Because Islam then is saying, yeah, there's Abraham, you know, there's Isaac, or Ishmael, you know, all that. Totally, Moses, yeah. We're all down with that. But we're the only descendants of them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you do with that. Do you have thoughts on how you would solve that theologically?
So we're saying, and if Judaism didn't exist.
Yeah.
And okay.
Well, you can take either one, but I think that that's a pretty decent out you came up with for the first one.
Yeah. So I would definitely say that. I suppose you could then use the same thing where you're like, it just hasn't got there yet. We're meant to come and bring that message, but I don't want to just use that as an out. I almost feel like you have to start to say, maybe it doesn't exist.
Right.
Maybe it's not real.
Yeah, certainly it would open up an enormous theological conversation.
Or what about this? In the distant future, or distant past, a bad guy hid the fact that Christianity exists, and so now it's not even legend anymore, it's unremembered. And so it does exist, but it's been kept down by the man.
Oh man. Oh, that would suck.
Yeah. So it's out there, but we have to uncover it.
Now, you could almost take the opposite of that.
Okay.
What if we're the ones with the true religion suppressed, we discover this alternate universe,
and you get to a place, and that's okay.
And they're saying, no, this is the truth. Yeah, we did Christianity, and that was fine, but no, this is what the majority of the world believes now. Or I don't know if Christians are the majority, but you know what I say. There's a parallel to Christianity that's not Christianity, and they're saying, no, it was there in your world, it got suppressed here, and this is what you really want to believe. Gosh,
that would be interesting. So okay, so parallel universe idea. Yeah, this is a story idea. We exist, and it's not us that go someplace. Somebody comes here, and it's versions of people that we know exist here. So they're definitely parallel. And they're saying, we're here to bring you the real message. And we've been watching. We know that you had this back in the early 30s, 30 years after Jesus died. This was his real
message. Not the 1930s. The
30s. Yeah, when Jesus died, this is really what it was about, and you've changed it. Yeah. Oh, that actually brings up an interesting question. Let's come back to this idea. But what about this? This is just off the top of my head. What if Gnostic Christianity won the early battle?
Just off the top of your head. That was an email I sent you.
What if Gnostic Christianity won the early battle with Orthodox Christianity?
See, to me, this would be the biggest – this one would be the most challenging out of what we've discussed so far. And here's why. Because I think that as Christians, you know, obviously there's this early battle in Christianity, for people who don't know what we're talking about, where there's alternate gospels, you know, the gospel of Thomas, the gospel of Judas, all these guys. So there's Gnostic gospels out there, and there's early strains of Christianity that are into Gnosticism. And it eventually loses out to Orthodoxy. And I think most of us who are Orthodox Christians would say God guided that process. The Holy Spirit was in it in terms of helping the truth to win out, in terms of the canon being formed, whether you take a Catholic or Protestant view of that. I think everybody has to say that the Holy Spirit's involved in that process somehow. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we ostensibly believe, or at least that seems to be the best argument. Well, if Gnostic Christianity won in an alternate universe, it throws that entire argument into question, if not out the window, because now we have a universe where the Holy Spirit didn't guide. And what does that mean? You know, so if we don't say the Holy Spirit guided us, but not them, even though they have the same origins, they have Christianity, they have Jesus, but they went in a completely different route with it. You know, that to me would be the most troubling of the three, because I think that we're right, that you could take the argument, even with the Christianity doesn't exist one, that's just the extension of the Great Commission. Mm-hmm. It's just another mission field at that point. This one, they have Christianity, but it's Gnostic Christianity, and Orthodox Christianity lost the battle. That would be mind-blowing. and that would cause huge problems for Christian theology.
Okay, so I came out and said I would stop believing yes. in those past examples. What would you do? You get someplace where that where Gnostic Christianity won.
Well, it sounds lame, and I don't. I'll give an answer. What I would really do, and I can give a more satisfying answer than this, but I think you'd have to wait and see how the theological conversation progresses. In other words, there's obviously greater theological minds than ours who would be confronted with the same problem. What thoughts do they come up with? You know, what thoughts, in my case, what does the church decide about this? What do, you know, what does the Pope think? And what presumably there'd
so
be an ecumenical council.
For a Pope to tell you?
Well, not like where I'm just going to do whatever he says, but I think that there would have to be a council called within Catholicism. My belief as a Catholic is the Holy Spirit guides the councils. So I think there would need to be a period of deliberation of thought and see what develops. My gut reaction would be that it's time to rethink some things. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to say I'd stop believing, but it would certainly be cause to think.
Yeah, because when we did the alien episode, I basically said there's almost nothing that could get me to stop believing. Yeah. Even if, I mean, if aliens come, okay, I'll just figure out a way to work it around what I already believe. But some of these examples, this is the first time I've been willing on the show to dismiss my faith if this happened.
Yeah.
But then again, when I really, real life, if it really we discover a parallel universe, I don't see how I could just stop believing after. I mean, but is that just blind faith at that point?
Well, you know, I think that there's very few things that should be absolute destruction of faith. Like, you know, Paul talks about how if the resurrection didn't happen, our faith is in vain.
Yeah.
So that's one. You know, somebody definitively proves that Jesus didn't rise. That might be a faith-destroying thing. Mm-hmm. But even there's another scenario for you. We discover an alternate universe where it's been definitively proved that Jesus didn't rise from the dead.
Mm-hmm. I like the ideas of, and I'm sure we've talked about this in some past episode, but like the ideas of what if Jesus was incarnated at a different time period?
Right.
Or what if...
I don't know if we've talked about that.
Or what if there was never a fall, and so he never had to come and be incarnate. He could just... Oh, okay, here's a question. This is not exactly what we're talking about, but it's in line. Do you think... Now, this is not parallel universe related. It's about Jesus and the incarnation.
Yeah.
So we know Jesus coexisted eternally, forever.
Yeah.
And we also know he was incarnated as human eventually.
Eventually. Well, technically, wait. Jesus didn't Jesus did not exist forever. The Son.
Okay.
So, that's
okay.
I am, as a theologian, going to insist on precise language.
Okay,
there.
So let me start over. Okay. The Father, Son, Spirit existed forever, both ways.
Yes.
Past and future.
Both ways.
If they exist forever. Eventually, the Son became Jesus incarnated, right?
Yes.
And right now, even today, we think that that part of the Godhead is 100% man, 100% God.
Yeah.
So he still has a body, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay, but prior to the incarnation, was he only God, or has he always been part man, part God?
Oh, he's only God.
Okay.
Before then. I mean, that's what the incarnation is, isn't it? The taking on of human form.
So then the question is, what made me think about this is, we know that God's never changing, but he did change.
I think that the way you would get around that would be to say that God didn't change because he remained 100% divine.
Mm-hmm.
God assumed an incarnate form, but nothing within God changed. I think both Thomas and Augustine would go on at some length at this. So Augustine's De Trinitate and the opening section of Summa Theologica would both take on that question quite a bit and say that no, nothing in God changed at the assumption of human form.
But if his God part didn't change, he still added to it the human part.
No, because he didn't add. Nothing was added to God. Nothing changed in the divine part. He assumed, because they do get into this, because that's of course the Arian heresy, where we get into that the Son was created or the Son changed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have early Christianity is very sensitive to these questions.
Okay.
And that's where the whole formula, 100% God, 100% man, comes from. It's an attempt to get around that exact point.
And it really mathematically doesn't make any sense.
No. No.
He's 50-50, let's be honest.
So you can't go there because then you'd be just a human Aryan.
But I mean, if you add up 100 together, it's 50 plus 50.
Yeah, but he's God. He can do whatever.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
No, but I mean, it's a good point because the incarnation is entirely problematic for doctrine of God. You know, because Thomas starts with the idea that, you know, God is entirely simple. He's not a complex being. He has no component parts. Not simple like he's, you know, wearing a bike helmet or anything. He's simple in the sense that, you know, God is, you and I are complex beings in the sense that our fingers can fall off and, you know, we've got cells and molecules and all that. And so we can, complex beings are actually inferior in this sense because we can be broken down. God is entirely simple in that he has no complexity to him that can be, he can't be broken down into different parts. He's wholly one, wholly simple. So that's where Thomas starts with. And from there he derives, you know, a bunch of other qualities about God. But the incarnation then becomes a problem with that. And this is where you get a very interesting difference between Eastern and Western theology, because Eastern theology is going to emphasize far more, start with the individual members of the Trinity and work your way up to God as one, whereas Western theology starts with the idea that God is one and then works your way down to individual members of the Trinity.
Which way do you like better?
Well, you know, as a Western Christian, I'm totally on board with Thomas and Augustine, but I think both of them are quite valuable in terms of how we conceive about God. But they do, both of them leave you susceptible to different errors. So the Eastern perspective leaves you more susceptible to Arianism, and the Western perspective leaves you more susceptible to modalism, the idea that there isn't really a Trinity, there's just one God, and he kind of assumes different forms, and we see him in different ways, but really there's no Trinity within God.
This is interesting. I hadn't heard that Eastern-Western thing before. I think there's a big part of me that leans more towards thinking of him as three.
Yeah.
And working down to, but really, I know they're just one.
Right.
But really, the three.
Yeah.
So, wow, I must. And I don't fall for the Arian heresy. What's the full title? Arianism.
Yeah. No, good old Arius.
But no, but there was something, the actual title of the Arian
heresy.
Is it the heresy?
Okay. Yeah.
I studied that in school.
Well, you finished. I'm going to give you a little fun trivia.
Yeah, I mean, I say it in school. I could see, even though I don't agree with where he landed, I could see how he started down that road.
Right. Oh, totally. So Council of Nicaea in 325 is when Arianism is officially denounced by the church. Saint Nicholas, who you know better as Santa Claus.
Yeah, I do know him.
Participated at the Council of Nicaea.
Good work.
And is said, according to legend, got so frustrated with Arius that he walked up and punched him in the face.
Yes, so that's great.
Take that, Arius.
We should come back. Okay, so that is the perfect example of a topic that we would have on the Bible Trivia Podcast.
Yeah.
And that's a Christmas episode right there.
There you go.
Okay, so quick plug, Bible Trivia Podcast, we're doing our first episode later tonight. Yeah. So watch for it in this feed.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, so Arius's big deal was the Arians, they had a saying that was, there was a time where the sun was not. In other words, we believe that the sun is divine, but he's a created being.
Oh, yes. I don't agree with that at all, of course. But
yeah.
I would more tend to think, I was kind of questioning, is it possible he's always had a body? I don't think that now as I thought it through. I just was kind of wondering, has he always been like that?
Yeah.
But no.
You would say no.
That's the whole idea of the incarnation.
And if you say that, Thomas Aquinas will come back from the dead and
punch me in the face.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so let's stick with the idea of incarnation and then tie it into parallel universe.
Okay.
Did Jesus have to incarnate when he did? You know, Joseph, Mary, manger, that story. Or could he have... Was there a reason God picked that time period? Or could he come at a different time? Could he come in modern times?
I would say there's a lot of significance to the time period. Given where Judaism was at the time, I think it's very
in shambles.
Well, not quite yet.
The Second Temple was it had just been built, right?
No, the Second Temple had been built for a few hundred years at that point.
My bad, it was about to be destroyed.
Right.
Okay.
Which is why I think it's very significant that Jesus came when he did. You think about the timing of that and how significant the destruction of the temple was to the formation of early Christianity. you know, in the sense that that's where you have this whole debate between Paul and the so-called Judaizers about, you know, do Gentiles need to become Jewish to be included in Christianity? And Paul's saying, no, no, they don't. And his opponents are saying, yeah, yeah, they do. Well, the destruction of the temple basically solves that problem.
Yeah. You know, one of our professors, Dr. Wise, once said, just to try to set the stage and get us to understand how big of a deal that it was that the temple was destroyed, he said, I might not have this paraphrase exactly right, but it's comparable to finding the body of Jesus Christ. Like, say we found it right now and there is definitive proof that we have his body. It is him.
Yeah.
That's how big of a deal it was that the temple was destroyed. It was unthinkable to the Jews.
Right. And you think if that doesn't happen, the entire history of Christianity is different because it probably remains, at least to some degree, a sect within Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between the two faiths is much, much closer, whereas its destruction, Christianity really becomes a more prominently Gentile faith. As a result.
Well, why couldn't he come after the destruction of the temple?
Well, because the fact of the Jews being God's chosen people, I think that Judaism was thrown into complete state of turmoil, and the whole messianic scene all but disappears, at least for a while at that point, you know, in the sense of who the Messiah was supposed to be, what his relationship was to traditional covenantal Judaism. I mean, conceivably he could, but it would have been, Jesus would have been an entirely different figure had he come after the destruction of the temple.
Okay. What if Jesus didn't come until today, 2013, as we're recording this? Then the Jewish religion would have continued on. Maybe they would have made more temples. Would our TV evangelists today actually be the Jews?
No, because you think about that there's no concept of the Great Commission within Judaism.
Okay.
So
there is no evangelism.
Not really, no.
But then, okay, what do you say the dominant religion is in the world then if Christianity doesn't exist yet? But it's coming. It just doesn't exist yet. So we still have Judaism.
Yeah.
It still is around.
I don't know. That's a good question because, I mean, you could say Islam, but how much is Islam tied to the existence of Christianity? I think you could make a strong argument that those two go hand in hand. I think the real question becomes, what happens after the fall of Rome? Because that's where old Roman paganism really falls apart. And to oversimplify things drastically, Christianity is able to kind of use its foothold that it got in the last century or so of Rome to launch into the Middle Ages as the dominant religion. So what happens when Rome falls? Do we get another form of paganism? You know, there's no reason why prior to a Enlightenment era that some form of paganism couldn't have continued to exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would say that you probably continue to have polytheistic paganism at least through the Middle Ages, but, you know, does the Enlightenment even get produced from a culture like that?
It's crazy. It's like, it's just hard to imagine it going any other way.
Right.
So there are some good parallel stories here that we could, parallel universe stories we could tap into. I don't know, but...
Yeah, I would say you probably have two strains of religion dominant in the West. You have... continued on polytheistic paganism, and then you have a sort of religious form of Platonism that continues, where there is a belief in God, but it's much more deistic, less emphasis on the gods, more recognition of their mythological value, but not actual existence.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the way Socrates would have believed in God, I think that continues being as a more dominant upper class intellectual alternative to the polytheistic paganism of the masses.
Those are good thoughts, Ben. This is a really interesting discussion.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well,
we can't be wrong.
it's just kind of fun to think through some of the implications. So,
yeah.
So we kind of think that Jesus had to come at that time, but it'd still be interesting if he had come in maybe a later time or. I mean, what if he had come earlier during the what we now call the 400 years of silence?
Well, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
God was busy talking during the 400 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I believe he was, but there's no biblical.
Yes, there is.
Oh, in the Protestant Bible, there's nothing really
in the
happening.
Edited Bible. In the complete Bible, yeah, there's all sorts of books going on.
Wow. Interesting.
Yes.
So a little...
Well, I mean, that is actually a legitimate difference between Catholics and Protestants, that Catholics say, no, there was no 400 years of silence.
Well, you know, when I think silence, though, I don't actually think God wasn't active.
I know what you're saying.
I think he was active in the world. That just there's not biblical text during that time period.
Right, right. That's what I mean. Not in the sense that God, you know, just takes a vacation for 400 years, but in the sense that the Old Testament canon's done, and there's nothing in terms of divine writing until the New Testament. From a Catholic perspective, that's not the case. That we have those books being written in those 400 years. And so, yeah, within a Catholic mindset, there absolutely is a continuation of the canons. In fact, there you could even make the argument that the canon... It's really just one canon that never is closed until after the New Testament period.
Yeah. Okay. Here's how I want to kind of head towards the wrap-up.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a Romans 8 that people often will use as proof against things like multiverses and aliens. So I want to ask how literally we should take this verse. But first, let me just read a little bit from Romans 8. So from the ESV, the best version.
Well,
here it is.
If you like the edited Bible.
Starting at 18, verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth, until now. I think we can stop there, because that's where it says we know that the whole creation has been groaning together. So people will tie that in, say whole creation, universe, aliens, everything. Parallel universe, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that just like we've talked about with Genesis, we have to realize the biblical authors are writing from a worldview, and that God spoke through that worldview, and right now we still share that worldview, but if... The question I would pose to people who are using that as a kind of a clobber verse that parallel universes can't exist would be, if we discovered a parallel universe tomorrow, does that mean you just stop believing in your faith? Of course not.
Well,
not on that basis.
In some cases, I think I would really be questioning it. But in most cases, no, I wouldn't stop believing.
Yeah, so putting our specific scenarios aside, we just discover a parallel universe, or you know, we discover Narnia or whatever. No, you wouldn't stop believing in God and in Christianity just because of that verse and the basis of that discovery.
Yeah.
So I would say that that's a very weak argument.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'd have to agree, of course. We've talked about clobber verses before. Yeah. We are anti-clobber verses.
Not a fan.
Well, we've got some awesome feedback about this. I asked another question. If our listeners think that parallel universes are compatible with the Bible. So we're going to go to the listener feedback and then kind of wrap up, but I feel like there could be a lot more said here. So, yeah, if there's a topic...
Third episode.
Yeah, if there's a topic that you think we missed, let us know. You can write us at feedback@thescifichristian.com or phone call.
612-4121. SFC.
Yeah, and this is just a really fun topic. I love alternate universes. That this is like one of my favorite sci-fi themes. So, here we go. Let's see what the listeners got.
It's a trap. Right. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap.
Okay, Ben, you got it there?
I got it.
The question is the existence of a parallel universe or an alternate timeline compatible with a biblical worldview? I'll read the person's name and you read their response.
Okay.
Christian Erickson writes,
indeed, if God exists outside of time.
Okay, interesting. Doug Payton writes,
I would say that, quote, it is appointed unto man once to die, tends to not allow for something like that.
Oh, we have to address this.
Yeah.
Doug, though, let's say there's a parallel version of me, those are two separate beings,
That maybe we should refer people to the time loop episode, because I think we tackle that, the implications of that.
Let's just tease it a little bit.
Yeah.
Ben and I developed what could be called a universalism theory, in which we presupposed that all the versions of ourselves were somehow spiritually connected.
Yes.
And so the way that that all could be saved is that if just one of your parallel selves accepts Christ, then all of yourselves are saved.
Yeah. Now, I might need to rethink that from a Catholic perspective. Yeah. I think about it. But yeah, I still like that theory.
But I mean, again, this is presupposing that there is such a thing as parallel universes and that they're connected spiritually, which they aren't necessarily. So
right.
To Doug, then, I would say...
A thought experiment, not... we're not putting forth a doctrine.
I tend to think of each of the beings as individuals, not as, like, the other Matt is also me, and we're one together, just like God is one. So,
yeah.
All right, let's read on. Michael Poteet.
Good answer, Christian. So, Christian's response about if God exists outside of time. I think much the same can be said about this as can be said about extraterrestrial life. If alternate timelines or dimensions exist, God is just as sovereign over them as he is this one. I agree.
And Max wrote.
I hope so. No, not really, but kind of.
Yeah, I like that. John Wilkerson writes.
By parallel universe, do you mean there is me, John Prime, and in another universe there is John Delta? In that case, no. There is no biblical support for that. If you're asking whether a parallel spiritual universe to ours exists, then I think you could support it with scripture.
Interesting. I think what he's trying to get at is the spiritual realm is a sort of parallel universe.
Yeah. I hesitate to rule things out just because scripture doesn't mention them, and there's lots of things scripture doesn't mention.
Yeah, true.
So I'm not on board with that line of argument.
For example, I am fairly certain scripture doesn't mention pizza.
You're right.
However, I love pizza.
Oh, it's the best.
So there's an example, John.
Yeah.
Take that, science.
Take that, John.
What I like his use, though, I do like his use of the titles John Prime and John Delta.
Yeah.
And you were, when we're trying to think of a show title, you were coming back to this word primes. I can only think in comics where a term Earth Prime is used. But tell me about this Prime idea. Is it used often?
Well, I've heard it used often. I can't really think of tons of examples.
And that means this Earth we're on is Earth Prime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think in another universe, instead of having Amazon Prime, they have Amazon Delta?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, probably.
But don't you think the other universe would also think it's Prime?
I know. That's we'd have to fight that out.
That's the thing about, like, which ones. Which. Oh, have you seen the movie Another Earth?
I loved that movie.
That was really interesting.
Yeah. That was a phenomenal movie.
Is that a parallel universe or an alternate world?
I don't know if we get enough information in the movie to tell.
I feel like, well, the Earths are able to see
each other. It's not two different universes.
No.
Unless one crossed over, but we don't really get that answer.
All right, Peggy Severay says,
I agree with Christian and Michael. The idea of multiple dimensions is not, as far as I can tell, contrary to anything in the Bible, and is actually supported in some cases. I love the idea that the spiritual realm is just another dimension that we can know of the existence, but can only interact as far as our four accessible dimensions will allow.
Nice. Yeah, I think we did overlook mentioning the spiritual dimension, but I think we were going more the sci-fi route. But of course, there is a parallel dimension, the spiritual dimension, so we're on board with that. Well, it's almost, I mean, it does exist right alongside of us, too. We just can't see it.
Yeah.
Interesting. I have to come back to that. Jason Fancher says,
Did Jesus multiply slices of anchovy pizza in Universe B would have saved himself the trouble of making two miracles when you mix both ingredients?
Interesting.
I would say no.
Yeah, me also. All right. And Ben Avery from Strangers and Aliens podcast, where you can find them at strangersandaliens.com.
All right. If it does, the alternate you that exists is not you. It is a separate soul, a different life. The idea of alternate universes created by one me who chooses choice A and choice B is not supported by logic. If you include the idea of free will as we know it, though, essentially, you end up with multiple versions of me who have chosen every possible choice. This is a dimension of string theory.
String theory. Right?
Yeah, string theory. Great example of mentioning string theory without explaining it at all. So well done, Ben. By having multiple versions of me in multiple universes, you have some who follow Christ, some who don't, and there'd be an infinite number of my souls in heaven and an infinite number in hell.
Oh
check out the time loop episode because we answer that.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Ben Avery has a podcast that's similar to the Sci-Fi Christian where it mixes sci-fi and Christian theology. And Ben, I'm inviting you. I'd love to hear your team talk about this topic, this parallel universe. And I meant to bring you the clip of them calling themselves the B Team. You're basically a part of our podcast. And so
they're in the network.
Yeah, you're in our network, Ben. So, Strangers and Aliens, I'm sending out a call. Do a parallel universe episode. I'd be interested in listening to your thoughts.
Yeah, totally.
Finally, last listener feedback, Bob Martinez.
My question is, why does it have to be parallel? Why can't it be perpendicular?
Ooh, I wish I'd read that first. I wouldn't have even given that airtime.
Yeah,
sorry, Bob.
Very clever, Bob. But
all right,
yeah.
All right, well, Ben, I don't feel like we've definitively solved any problems here today. But
you forgot story time.
Whoa! Can you believe it? I even know what the stories are going to be about today.
Yes.
Well, don't worry, because before we close the show,
it's sci-fi Christian story time.
I can't believe you almost cut off story time.
Your look of shock was amazing. You actually what? I was a little afraid. I didn't know why you were mad at me. I was like, what did I do?
All right, so tonight's story is called Ben Gets Busted. So, you know, I've been fairly public here on the air about my pipe-smoking habit and how I... Well, it's not a habit, really, but my pipe-smoking habit.
It's a little addictive.
That's Matt Anderson's opinion, not mine. But there's some circles where I'm not quite as open with it, you know, particularly around my parents, who maybe, you know, wouldn't be such a fan of that, because, you know, they're kind of like Matt in that way. They're not usually a big fan of things like smoking. A little bit with drinking, they're okay with that in moderation, but smoking, not so much. So I've neglected to mention it. So this story begins about a month ago when I bought a tweed overcoat on eBay, and it arrived and it fit me beautifully.
I really like it.
I love it. It's so comfortable and it's warm, great for winter. It looks stylish, you know, so it goes well with, you know, a little bit more formal getup, which is what I was wearing this morning because I had to go to a client site. So I had on dress pants and dress shirt and everything. So I wore my tweed overcoat, and I was having lunch with my mom today after I was done it at the client's place. So I went over to my mom's house and you know, wearing my tweed overcoat. She's, oh, that's a nice coat. Oh, thanks, Mom. She goes, yeah, it looks very academic, you know, kind of like C.S. Lewis. I was like, oh, thanks. You know, it's always good to be compared to C.S. Lewis. And then she says, just don't start smoking a pipe. And I, you know, because I don't want to lie to my mom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that'd be terrible. Definitely get some purgatory time for that.
Outrageous.
Yeah, so I definitely not wanting to lie to my mom, but I don't want to say. She's like, well, you got to promise me that.
Oh, no.
And then she says, unless you have already.
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, sometimes.
Oh, no.
And she says, well, I just don't ever want to see it. Or I'll come and throw a bucket of water on your pipe because I never want to see that.
Oh, no.
So, but then she seemed cool with it besides that.
But as we were saying here tonight, the story continued.
Yeah, the story continues because then, you know, right before recording, I got a text from my mom. And she said, your announcement about the pipe smoking so threw me that I forgot to give you a plate of brownies I had made.
Oh, my gosh. Special brownies?
Yeah, it's the kind you used to like with chocolate and marshmallow and peanut butter. So I got brownies waiting for me. But it's actually okay because I gave up dessert for Lent, so I can't eat the brownies till next week.
During the times where hippies existed, they used to make brownies a lot.
I think they do.
Those are the kind of brownies
Don't think my mom is making pot brownies, no. So that's the story. It turned out to have a happy ending, you know, broke the news and accidentally. But, yeah, thumbs up to my mom for being moderately cool with it.
I have a story.
Yeah.
We received one email from a listener with their top 20 favorite sci-fi shows.
Yeah.
And we're asking you to do this before the end of April. We're formulating the first official sanctioned Sci-Fi Christian top 100.
So get on it.
We're going to send out the top 100 sci-fi TV shows to the airwaves. But first, we need you, the listeners, to be voting. So send us your emails at feedback@thescificchristian.com so that we can start to tabulate who has the best show.
Absolutely.
And Ben, we can't end this episode without announcing the Bible Trivia Podcast, which you'll be able to listen to this week, being released on Easter or earlier.
Yeah.
And the first episode is gonna have an Easter theme even.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And so, man, so
much. Then next week we're gonna have the results of our Tolkien Lewis contest.
Next week the episode will be all about Tolkien Lewis, your stories.
And we currently have another trivia contest going on, which you can listen to last episode.
Yep.
If you don't listen to the news episodes, make sure you turn in for the listener feedback section.
Ben, since we won't have to do a lot of feedback or preparation for next week's episode because we'll be reading some of their stories, I think you and I should come up with our own Tolkien Lewis.
Yeah. I've had a good one in mind for a couple months.
I don't have
one
yet, so I have to come up with one.
In fact, I'm not going to tell you.
No, don't tell me. Yeah. So, and finally, this summer coming, the episode you've all been waiting for, Marriage Advice for Matt. Keep your advice coming because I didn't get any this week.
Oh, no.
So I think people are starting to fall on the wayside. I need you to send me marriage advice. I want to be an awesome husband.
Yeah. Even like negative advice, like this is what you don't do.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
That's the best.
Like today I did my taxes. Yeah. And
well, you should do those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the tax guy was giving me some great ideas on things to keep track of for both of us over the course of this next coming year. So, yeah. I'm pumped. So, Ben, High five.
Another great episode. That great was episode. A terrible high five.
You can call us at 612-421-21-SFC.
Or feedback at scifichristian.com, but don't call that one. Put it in your email.
That's all from here. I'm Ben Anderson.
I am Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
And Ben is right. Goodbye.
Signing off. Is that your new catchphrase?
Yeah, I think so.
And Ben is right. I'm signing off, and Ben is right.
And Ben is right.
Should we tease an episode?
Didn't we just do that?
On the next The Sci-Fi Christian Time Loop
Talk. Oh, I was going to tease Tony Lewis. It's the time loop.
Time loop. You want more from this multiverse topic? Well, guess what? It's coming.
It actually already came.
And guess what else? We have two guest hosts on that. And not just me and Ben. It's also Skip Crust and Talon Gwynn.
Yeah. Neither of whom really listen to the show anymore.
Yeah. Check it out. Episode 138.
Yeah. How about that, people?
And the Bible Trivia Podcast.
Yeah, especially that one.
Do you want a sneak preview of the music? No.
No.
They'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.